Some might say that Newfoundlanders are natural storytellers, or just natural talkers, seemingly able to come up with how to handle any situation that's thrown at them. Say, for example, you write and produce a podcast about weird stories that starts with a scripted intro, but 5 minutes before your record time, you realize it was your turn to write the aforementioned intro. What odds, you think? I'll do it on the spot. We're not playing for an ostrich after all. And after all, it's all just for a laugh. In this, the final episode of Season 6 of the Some Weird Podcast, we're doing just that. Telling stories from Newfoundland with friends and family. We hope you, our friggin' awesome audience, enjoy this weird episode, and I hope you're okay with this intro that I manged up so that we can get this recording on the go. Welcome to the Some Weird Podcast, a podcast about strange and unusual stories told by us, a sister and brother team hailing from the island of Newfoundland. I'm your co-host, Chrissy.
And I'm your co-host, Barry.
And I'm your guest co-host, Ted.
Long-time listeners know the deal. Our finale for each season is dedicated to stories from our home province, Newfoundland and Labrador. And we always have your best friend of mine, Ted, as a returning guest.
Always a pleasure to be on the Some Weird Podcast.
Usually a pleasure to have you, but that was really weird delivery.
This ain't the Halloween episode. Chrissy, that intro like was very meta. You know, you basically wrote what was on your mind right before you wrote it. So that's good.
Yep.
That's exactly what happened. Oops. Yeah, I like to think I'm prepared, but in reality, it's all just a fucking show. Here we go. So my story from Newfoundland is one that we may have mentioned in passing in previous episodes, but we've never done a full deep dive into it. So I'm going to talk about a ceremony called the Screech-In. Somewhere in about the mid-1800s, a new academic discipline called anthropology gained a lot of traction. There are several sub-branches of anthropology, and it's not really much of a coincidence that it did become a thing during the heyday of European colonialism. But to simplify things, today we see this subject as a way to study human cultural evolution amongst various and diverse cultures around the world. When you're working on your Bachelor of Arts degree, it's alphabetically close to the top of the list, so it's a great choice when you need to pick an elective and you're too unbothered to search through the whole catalog for possible courses. Unrelated to the above statement, when I took classes in anthropology way back in the day, the goal always seemed to be to find some pocket of people who were yet to be contacted by someone from a Western culture. Bearing that, if you were to pursue anthropology as a career, you could always go to some far-flung place and live in a society where cultural heritage was strange and unusual in comparison to yours, so you could observe and learn. Now, oftentimes, these cultural groups may not be super happy with you coming in with your weird questions that really all boil down to, what's all this about?
Yeah.
The boys are probably just trying to live their lives without being studied, and so it's understandable that they could be a little standoffish. Now, the luckiest anthropologist would find some kind of an inn after some time of negotiating with the people of that society. Eventually, they would gain some level of acceptance and trust, which would allow them to stay for a spell and figure out what's on to go. And then the unlucky ones get to bums rush.
This is the plot line to Avatar.
The blue people Avatar?
Minus the mining.
So they spent how many billion dollars and the thing they're mining? Unobtainium. Come on. You got that far. $1 billion.
Okay, back on track. While I don't think Newfoundlanders have ever been studied by anthropologists, I think if we were, there would never be that tentative and tense period where an anthropologist wonders if they will ever be able to gain enough trust to peek into the culture. Because we in Newfoundland have an official ceremony where if you're come from away, anthropologist or otherwise, you could become an honorary Newfoundlander. Of course, this is the Screech-In. Now, I've not come across any other culture where such a ceremony exists, so let's get into it. Firstly, what is Screech? Since the 1960s, Screech is a rum that's imported from Jamaica and then blended and bottled in Newfoundland. On a rock in the cold North Atlantic, it's pretty difficult to grow the sugarcane that's needed for the main ingredient of rum. Of course, by this I mean it's impossible to grow much more than anything besides root vegetables and cucumbers if it's in a hugely expensive and economically questionable greenhouse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't produce the rum in Newfoundland, but screech was a huge part of Newfoundland culture way before the mid-20th century. Way long ago, and during a time that's very uncomfortable to think about, screech was imported from Jamaica in exchange for salted codfish. Now, you might be thinking, what would the crowd down in the Caribbean want with Newfoundland cod? I'm sure there's tons of fish down there. Plus, they've got fruit that didn't fall off a truck. It just grows there. Well, like Newfoundland, Jamaica was a British colony. Now, there's several blatant differences between these two colonies, but the one I want to point out here is, unlike Newfoundland, Jamaica had enslaved people to work on those sugar plantations. All of those enslaved people needed to be fed, and Newfoundland cod was more than plentiful, enough to feed the empire for all time. In that line from the Heritage Minute, which I think we probably say at least 12 times per season.
Yeah, off-referenced.
I always thought of that as the people from Europe were getting codfish, or the British Navy were being fed by Newfoundland cod so that they could defend the empire. And never, ever once did I connect that this was also meant to support slavery by providing a food source that was thought to be never-ending.
Yeah, didn't get into that in the Heritage Minute.
Not happy and proud of it, but happy to learn about that. You know, like it's all connected. Now, slavery ended in Jamaica back in 1834, but the saltfish rum connection between our colonies remained. To this day, the national dish of Jamaica is ackee and saltfish. Barry, are you hearing Harry Belafonte? Jamaica farewell. Ackee rice, saltfish are nice. And the Newfoundland rum that's known as screech plays a huge part in Newfoundland and Labrador tourism. Screech is an unusual name for something that you want people to purchase. It sounds more like something that's god-awful rather than something that's desirable. Like all things in Newfoundland, the origins of the name screech is a story, more likely a myth, set in believable circumstances. During World War II, and the first years of the Cold War that followed, Newfoundland was still a British colony. Due to its strategic location, the Crown saw fit to allow its North American allies, the Canadians and Americans, to set up military bases in Newfoundland and Labrador. To this, the U.S. Navy set up a base in Argentia, bringing with it an influx of American servicemen. Ted, you probably remember this quite well.
Oh, yes.
I didn't realize that Argentia was near Placentia.
It is. It's right next to it. We would drive around on the airstrips when we were... They were all abandoned, of course. But in the 90s, we would get in our cars and just go skip school and just go driving aimlessly around the base.
So in like the 80s and early 90s, were you allowed on the base? Did you need like a passport? It was considered U.S. soil, right?
It was. So you would have to be sponsored on the base. Like when I was younger, which is any time before this moment, I guess, when I was in the 90s, I would go on the base because I had a friend who had dual citizenship, and his father was a serviceman and he was retired, but he could go on the base and his mom could go on the base and shop because they had all American stuff straight from the States. And we used to watch movies down there, but you'd have to be sponsored in. So somebody'd have to like rep for you or whatever and just go, yeah, they're with me. But yeah, it was like growing up next to an American town that was, you know, 10-foot fence of barbed wire on top of it. So yeah.
That is so interesting. Placentia, compared to Bay Roberts, is not that far. You know, Diagonal Bay, right?
Yeah.
But, like, I never found, like, we had any exposure to the American base in Bay Roberts, right?
No, Barry? We didn't. No, we used to get, like, Russian sailors coming in to get the salt and that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Russians used to come in and they'd go to Byway and they'd buy, like, all, like, the $2 sneakers that would be there. Bring them back to communist Russia.
That's true.
Back to your story.
All right, so back to how screech got its name. So as one version of the story goes, a local man was hosting a visit with one of the American servicemen, so he offered him a drink. Back in the 1940s, so this is when this would have happened, there were far fewer regulations on alcohol, so the alcohol content on the Newfoundlander's rum was ridiculously high. But this was the rum that the Newfoundlander was used to. So the skipper downs his fine shot of rum, and the American accepts the hospitality of his new neighbor and downs it as well. Not expecting the harshness of the rum that his new friend swigged so easily, the poor Navy guy shrieked out. Wondering what all the racket was, the commanding officer, who was conveniently within earshot, busts in to inquire what all that awful sound was. to which the Newfoundlander plainly explained, "The screech, 'tis the rum, me son." And the legend was born.
Is that right?
I knew it was something about somebody screeching, but that was it.
And now, it's likely not a true story, but we had the American base, and the Americans can't drink the rum that we're drinking, and
there's kernels of truth in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. All right, fast forward a couple of decades when a teacher named Merle Vokey pretty much invented the screech-in ceremony where the CFA can receive an official certificate declaring them an honorary Newfoundlander, and all they have to do is follow a few simple steps. There's variations on the ceremony itself, but here's the gist. The MC, who must be a Newfoundlander born and bred, and is usually dressed in a sou'wester and oilskins, if possible, calls forth the CFAs and asks, "Is ye a screecher?" The CFAs must then answer in Newfoundlandese, "Deed I is me old cock, and long may your big drib draw." Next, the pledgers have to eat a Newfoundland delicacy, usually fried bologna. Once that's done, they have to pay homage to the almighty cod by kissing an actual codfish, but in some cases, apparently, if you're less adventurous, you can alternatively kiss the arse of a toy puffin. The final step is downing the shot of the good old Newfoundland screech. Now that's it. You've completed all the steps necessary to become an honorary Newfoundlander, and you receive your certificate suitable for framing. Since its invention, back in the 1960s, countless visitors to Newfoundland and Labrador have been screeched in, including my own husband, who was screeched in by your co-host, Barry.
Yes.
Nice.
And I always thought that the screech-in was nothing but a bit of fun, but I learned during my research that people fucking hate it. Did you guys know this?
People, like Newfoundlanders, hate it?
Yes, they hate it. This never occurred to me. So the backlash seemed to come when then-Premier Clyde Wells and others called for an end to the screech-in and the destruction of all certificates.
That's what we needed from our premiers. That's the kind of topics they need to be working on.
I just broke a ball joint in a 3-foot pothole out on the road. Yeah, that's what I want. Oh, you know what's important? Right. I sit there.
The screech-in.
Yeah, well, at least the Clyde is working on getting rid of them dang certificates.
If he took all the certificates and paper mache'd them into something to fill up the pothole, maybe that would be useful. But
prosperity ever since. Once he took care of that.
Well, I'm going to tell you why such a backlash came in the 1990s about this and what it was all about. So Clyde and Devise argued that the ceremony propagated a negative image of Newfoundlanders as less intelligent, backwoods, alcoholics who can't even speak articulately.
I was going to say, that's only the crowd from the Bay, but no, I
think that. The Oz.
Clearly, we're good with the screeching because we're joking about it the whole time
exactly.
Here. But now, that said, I think it is very important to consider all opinions because closed-mindedness is the enemy of progress and learning. So, given the time, Meech Lake was a whole big thing. If you know, you know. And the codfish moratorium was instituted, which basically collapsed our economy. And it was a rough time to be a Newfoundlander.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pile on that the very real negative perception that some people, mostly from mainland Canada, did have towards us. And I could see how frustrating that it might have been. The question was, why are we making ourselves the butt of the Newfie jokes that we hate so much? But that's the thing. There's a big difference between being a Newfie and being a Newfie. The screech-in is a joke that we're all in on. It's meant to be satirical, and we're inviting our visitors to laugh with us, not at us. That's how I see it. It's not meant to represent what real Newfoundlanders are like now. It's making CFAs do things that people joke that Newfoundlanders do. No Newfoundlander ever says, "Long may your big jib draw." That's only in the screech-in. No one dresses like that. We don't eat bologna every day. And I have never met a Newfoundlander who drinks screech.
Yeah, it's not a popular beverage at all. In terms of rum here in Newfoundland, lambs is the rum of choice. Why that is, I don't know. but it's certainly not screech. Screech is purely for tourism.
It is. And besides, what a comment it is on our home that people want to be part of it, even if it is only in a silly ceremony that's full of jokes that we're all laughing at together. Either way, love it or hate it, the origins of screech, the drink, and screech in the ceremony, I think, are some weird.
All right, so we've talked about the screech in. What do we got next?
A movie pitch. So picture it. Newfoundland, almost jungle, all alders. The year is 1991, and there's somebody pushing through these alders, and it's a young 12-year-old boy. And then all of a sudden, he looks up, and there's this obelisk that's about 8 stories high, out in the middle of nowhere. Cut to the credits, the title screen, Pearson's Peak. Bum, ba, ba, ba. Subtitle, The Forgotten Monument or The Shaft That Got the Shaft. I haven't figured out which one we're going which one we're gonna go with.
You know we're going with The Shaft That Got the Shaft.
Yeah, I think so. So that young boy was me. I was headed to the Scout Jamboree over on the west coast of Newfoundland. And I actually have in my right hand right now, 6th Newfoundland Labrador Provincial Jamboree, July 6th to the 13th, 1991.
Okay.
That the green hat you have?
No, that's 87.
Oh, okay.
I still wear my cub hats because I guess hopefully my head hasn't got that much bigger. I had a big head, so heed. So have you heard of the phrase, finish the drive in 65?
100%.
No, I can't say I've ever heard of it.
That's right.
Okay.
Big lie. Yeah, I do know we'll finish the drive in 65, but listeners in Korea, Kenya, and Iceland do not. Not Greenland.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to tell you about it. So the Trans-Canada Highway goes from one ocean to the other ocean, which is Pacific Ocean to Newfoundland or Newfoundland to Victoria, BC. I traveled the trip in 2008. If you can do it, I highly recommend it. It took a couple of weeks and it's a big, beautiful country. There's a lot of trees in Canada. I can tell you that. So Trans-Canada Highway has been completed for about 60 years, but back in the day, it wasn't completed across Newfoundland back in the 50s. And we're going to talk about going into the 60s. For years, the only way you could travel across Newfoundland was from St. John's to Port-au-Basque. Continuously by land was by rail, which took, supposedly on a very good day, 23 hours.
It used to take an hour and a half to get from Bear Arbor to Carbonear, which is like a 15-minute drive.
That's true.
Yeah. So about getting this Trans-Canada Highway completed, Newfoundland couldn't undertake such a big thing of hundreds of kilometers of road that they had to pave, because before that there was just basically what you'd call a cow's path, and it was logging roads and stuff like that to go across. And agreements were signed in the 1950s and early 60s to build this road, and one agreement was signed in 1950 and it called for 50-50 sharing of the highway. So under this agreement, the highway is to be finished in 56, but then 56, nothing had been done and lack of funds and blah, blah, blah. So traversing across the province was still a bit cracked.
So, Ted, when you said it was a 50-50 split, you mean the cost of building the road across Newfoundland was 50 split between Government of Canada and Provincial Government of Newfoundland?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane.
Well, that's basically what they said. Soon after, I think it might have been 56, another agreement was reached that provided a 90-10 federal provincial funding split. Much better. Canada, as you might have guessed, it paid 90. And Canada itself was just still coming unto its own. We didn't even have our flag yet, because 65 the flag became a thing.
We didn't even have an official constitution until 1982.
Yeah, that's right. Get it together, boss. Come on. So this agreement led to the building of close to 100 kilometers of road. And then in 1960, yet another 50-50 agreement was reached. But that was like, that's probably no go, boss. So enter Lester B. Pearson. And a much better agreement came up in 1964. So under this agreement, that was when it came the 90-10 split to be undertaken in 1963 to 1967. So with this agreement signed, there was a rush on it to complete the highway in the allotted time. Think about this story and dip it in a bucket of politics, because it was all like people just going, okay, no, we have to look good. So there was a fair bit of that. To celebrate the completion of the highway, the following year was going to also be come home year. Signs started being erected all across the province saying, we'll finish the drive in 65. And some just had dot, dot, dot. The one in front of Confederation Building, which is our Capitol building, had that. And then along the highway, they'd have the full phrase, which is finish the drive in 65, thanks to Mr. Pearson, who was the prime minister at the time. So paving continued 1963 right to 1965 in winter and summer. And I talked to my mother about it. She said, oh, yes, they were paving all year round. They were stories of them paving over ice and just like,
oh, not smart.
The next year having to tear it all up. So like it was ambition, but it was also politics and yeah. looks. In 1965, November 27th, the last strip of asphalt was laid. 1966, the next year. Two-car convoys, one starting in St. John's, Newfoundland, and one starting in Port-au-Basque, the one in St. John's, headed by Premier Joey Smallwood, and the other one in Port-au-Basque, the other side of the province, was headed by Lester B. Pearson himself. Supposedly, the one leaving St. John's was about 2 miles long, and they were to meet at Grand Falls, Windsor, to mark the occasion, a little bit outside. It was a big to-do, and there were stories of people going up to the highway and waving and all this pomp and circumstance.
It's like the Cannonball Run.
Yeah. The Newfoundland Premier, Joey Smallwood, wanting to show appreciation for Pearson's financial support, decided to erect a monument at the halfway point. It was a rock pillar, about 25 meters. 25 meters is about like a 7 to 8 story building, 82 feet high, supposedly.
In comparison, do you know how many stories is Confederation Building?
Ooh, good question. More than that, I would say.
Yeah, probably not a ton more, though, right? And Confederation Building is the tallest building in the province, right?
Yeah, like Newfoundland doesn't have many, you know, quote-unquote, skyscrapers to the point where there's actually legislation that they can't have them, right? So,
there's legislation that says you can't have skyscrapers?
Really? Oh, that's what stopped me.
You're going to build your own TED Tower?
Yeah,
I could be wrong on that, too, but I do believe that there is rules around how high a building can be here.
I used to think you remember everything, but once I heard about the motherfucking PIMP story,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm kidding. It's probably true, locked in your brain somewhere. Everything else is.
So this structure was rock and concrete, obelisk, perched atop a hill between Grand Falls and Badger. It was at a point determined to be the midpoint of where the road met, like it was the middle point from St. John's to Port-au-Basque. On it was a lit up maple leaf and a plaque. So the maple leaf was lit up 24/7. This was all lovely, beautiful. So some of my research was a guy, Mark Richardson, in a blog about a trip he took across Canada in 2015. He said, but now there's nothing there. Bum, bum, bum.
The monument's gone?
Yes. Yes.
I've never seen it before.
Yeah. I think that would be something I would remember because I've driven across the province many times.
And by the way, sorry, quickly, due to strict height regulations in downtown area, the city has very few high rises in comparison to other cities of similar size. So there you go. There is height restrictions.
In downtown, yes, there's, if you want to go up the bay and put up like a, you know, 50-foot skyscraper.
50-footer one up in
Butlerville.
Butlerville, yeah.
Mary Brown's on every floor.
That would be the most economical building in the province.
Pays for itself.
Yep. Sorry, go ahead, Dan.
So this guy, Mark Richardson, says, nobody is quite sure what became of it. Longtime residents of the area recall that it fell down in disrepair. It seems to be, it was very political and was like, look what we did. And essentially they put up this big rock tower. And if it's built out of concrete, like it's not just stone, it's going to have maintenance. So supposedly, over the years, it became unsafe with pieces of rock sometimes falling. And this is him taking a bit of license. It falling near the cars that were parked by amorous couples.
Oh,
nice.
And he said there was nothing else to do there after all. There was no picnic area or green space, just a circle of asphalt surrounded by bush with a pillar in the middle up about 100 meters of road. So it was just, it was a thing, but then it quickly became not a thing.
It's this big rock stick in the middle of nowhere that did nothing.
Yeah, it's a really unusual thing to construct.
Yeah. It got a light on it. It got a maple leaf.
The maple leaf is cool. I wonder what happened to that maple leaf.
I kind of know and not know.
Okay.
That's a further mystery. So the province chose to dismantle it instead of repairing it. The entrance currently is just dug up, so cars can't go in there. And aside from some rubble and firewood sticks, there's nothing whatsoever to mark the spot. So there's a picture in the unveiling in 1966 of the Prime Minister and the Premier standing adoringly looking at this plaque, which says, "This shaft was unveiled by the Prime Minister, the Right Honorable Lester B. Pearson on July 12, 1966, to mark the official opening of the Trans-Canada Highway in Newfoundland.
I'm sorry. They shouldn't have said shaft.
They have a big blanket over the shaft, and they hauled it off. What's that under that 80-foot high thing there? What's that big blanket? What's that covering under? Did they look off his number, the big rock wall? Oh, wow.
Yeah. So what happened to the plaque? Apparently it was found in a landfill site.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes.
It was chucked out in the woods next to some old stoves and fridges. And
scrap cars.
Yes.
Where it went, nobody really knew, or nobody will say. The maple leaf disappeared, and who knows, probably melted down. You don't really know.
Oh, man.
And finally, there's nothing there now. So it would have been when I was there in 91, it was totally in disrepair. It was supposedly demolished in 1997. So RIP Pearson's Peak, 1966, 1997. So it lasted 31 years. And finally, I believe the phrase was, since the road was so quickly done and probably not the best, it was finish the drive in 65, start the fix in 66.
So, nice.
There you go. And that's the story of Pearson's Peak.
And they're still working on the Trans-Canada.
So when you were there like in 91 for like a Cubs jamboree or a Cub camp or whatever, did you camp at the Body Rocker or did you just draw? Like,
no,
how'd you come
no.
across it?
We just stopped. The jamboree was in Killdevil in Gros Morne. So like we still had, 3 hours to go. I don't know why we stopped there. I guess
like a piss in the woods. Like there's nothing there. You say there's no picnic tables and nothing.
Well, no, but I'd say you could still see it from the road, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like when you're driving across, you know, with kids, you go, oh yeah, no, that's the thing. Because they would have remembered it and they would have remembered the whole finish the drive in 65. I didn't know what I was looking at. I thought John Kretschian made it, right? I had no idea. The leaders must have known, did know, because it was very popular. Like, ask anybody, any Newfoundlander, an older Newfoundlander who would have remembered 1965, they would know this.
Very interesting. I never heard tell about a drive of 65 was very common, but I didn't know that they erected a shaft to commemorate said event.
Shaft got the
pretty
shaft.
Cool. Shaft to the shaft.
And that's the kind of quality stories we get when we have Ted on here. Like, I didn't know anything about it. And then I guarantee you almost nobody knows this weird story about the monument that no one cares about.
And I could see if it was small, but it was humongous. It was put up and just forgotten about.
It was in the middle of nowhere. So.
Yeah, and just, like, no real thought put into it post that. Like, yeah, build it. Come on, boys.
It was just Smallwood doing something. Hey, check this out. Look what I did for you, Pearson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Made you a shaft.
Look at my shaft. And you can cut that out.
Nope.
Yeah, so I don't know where to go from there, but we were mentioning stories about the screeching ceremony and the Pearson's Peak, the great 80-foot shaft. I don't really have much of a story here, but I'm going to talk a little bit about Newfoundland cuisine or Newfoundland foods. Christian and I have a conversation about this. Newfoundland, I don't know if our cuisine is well-defined or really good, but there's a lot of interesting foods that we do have. I got some foods here I'm going to talk about in terms that are not necessarily specific or only found in Newfoundland, but certainly very popular here. And I got them broken down into some different categories. So I'm going to start off with main dishes.
Okay. It's like a recipe book here.
Yeah. So the first main dish that we think of Newfoundland is Jig's Dinner. So I think Jig's Dinner is basically a traditional Newfoundland meal that usually is ate on Sunday and consists of boiled cabbage, potato, carrot, turnip, peas pudding, salt beef. If anyone don't know what salt beef is, it's exactly that. It's this salty beef that comes in a bucket.
It comes in a bucket of blood.
Do you like salt beef?
Yes, good salt beef.
So that's your Jig's Dinner. Like, so you get the salt beef, it's a weird bucket full of beef that was very fatty and salty.
I love salt beef.
Sometimes you put like a mustard pickle on it. So,
Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. So explain to us what mustard pickles are. And I think Chrissy's a fan. So go ahead.
Give me that.
I'll go to eat the whole thing.
I'm probably having such a visceral reaction because I can't get that stuff here.
Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Mustard pickles. Zesty is the brand, right? So basically it's normal like cucumber pickles. usually there's a piece of cauliflower in there.
One piece of cauliflower.
The onion, that's a treasure in there. But yeah. instead of being like the pickle brine, it's like a sweet yet also pickly, thin, bright yellow mustard. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
I think it's the brine mixed with mustard, I think is what it is.
Probably, yeah. Anyways, I do like it.
Interesting thing about these mustard pickles, in the last, I'm going to say 5 years, they kind of went off the market for a while, and people were selling them on Kijiji for like 20, 30 bucks a jar. Remember that?
Yeah. People crazy for them.
But yeah, that's mustard pickles. You say it's something you probably put one or two on your plate while you're eating Sunday dinner, right? So we had this a lot growing up, and I didn't appreciate it at the time. But there's a lot of work that goes into making that meal, man.
Yeah.
A lot of dishes, a lot of cleaning. And that was like almost a Sunday occurrence, every Sunday occurrence, right?
Just about every Sunday.
Yeah. Now, not to get too off topic, because we are talking about Jig Center, but what kind of pudding game is going on? So one is peas pudding, cooked in a bag.
Yep, in the bag, yeah.
It's yellow split peas, salty. It's kind of like the consistency of like mashed potatoes, kind of. That's fantastic. I used to love it, but my brother didn't like it, and then he started liking it, and then he started scooping it on his plate like mashed potatoes, and I was like very upset because I was like, you're stealing them. And the other pudding was the molasses raisin pudding, also cooked in a bag in the water that all the root vegetables were cooked in. So you'd pop in the pot and cook it with them. Yeah.
I mean, they're both delicious.
Yeah.
What kind of puddings did you have on the go? And also one more thing was with the molasses pudding, mom used to make like rum sauce, like a sugar and maybe cream and like rum.
We were definitely peas pudding.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
No molasses pudding?
We had molasses pudding not as often and definitely not with rum in it.
Yeah, that's right. That's wasting the booze.
That's exactly right. Yes, the parents wouldn't share the rum with us. We used to mad. No, mom definitely was a peas pudding maker, for sure.
Oh, so did you ever get a Jig's Dinner down in Jersey?
No, you can't get salt beef here.
Okay.
The closest the Jig's Dinner is corned beef and cabbage.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Molasses pudding looks like pumpernickel bread, basically.
Yeah.
Jig's Dinner is probably the most famous, I would say, Newfoundland meal.
I don't know. Let's see what else you got on the list.
Okay, and like I said, if I missed any, for sure, this was definitely not an exhaustive list that I got here. But next one I got is Fish and Brews, or Brewis. It's spelled Brewis, but it's Brewis. So this is a traditional Newfoundland meal consisting of cod and hard bread. If anyone doesn't know what hard bread is, or hard tack is another term for it. It's this piece of bread, but it is like basically the consistency of a rock. And if you try to eat it, you'll basically break all your teeth.
It's like chalk. It's that dense. And also dusty.
Yeah, that's right. So it's, I think it was made for like back in the days when you had to like sail on the sea for like months on end. You'd have that. It wouldn't go moldy or bad or anything like that.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So fish and brews is prepared by soaking salt fish overnight in water and hard bread also being soaked in water overnight. Then boiled separately and combined. Have you ever had fish and brews? I can honestly say I don't think I've ever had it.
Oh, I've had fish and brews.
Okay.
Maybe you just didn't try it.
I'm not a big fish guy.
It's okay.
Okay. Ted?
I've probably had a scoop of it.
Okay.
Like if I was at a friend's place and they had fish, that's fish and brews. And I go, okay, one half scoop just to try it. And then it just mixes in with everything else.
Yes, right. And sometimes fish and brews is served with scrunchions, which you already talked about. So scrunchions, it comes in like a vacuum sealed...
Mm-hmm. The cuisine is a loose term, man.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like this white pig fat, and you fry it, and it's just like eating like a chunk of salt.
It's so good. Yeah. I love
and
it.
It is so good. It is fantastic. I got to say, I love scrunchions.
Yes. Usually you have scrunchions with salt fish.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like when they're cooked, it ends up being like the size of like hash browns maybe or potatoes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they become like a beigey, yellowy color.
It probably is the most unhealthy food you've ever eaten.
Oh, very much so, yes. Yeah, scrunchions are delicious, though. I don't care.
Scrunchions are great. So that's fish and brews. Next one, Towtons.
Yep, love them.
So basically, yeah. Towtons is fried bread dough in the shape of a pancake, basically. and it's served with molasses or maple syrup.
They're also called damper devils. Have you ever heard that?
No.
No.
Okay, so damper devils or Towtons came about because you'd make your own bread. And then if you had any dough that was left over, not enough to make a loaf out of, you'd put that on the back of your wood stove and fry it up that way. And that's why it was called a damper devil.
Haved and molasses on her.
Haven on.
Yeah.
Ted, what's your thoughts on Towton's?
Oh, good time. Yeah.
Yeah. Big fan of Towton's.
Now with artisanal foods and all that stuff, you can get Towton's like in a fancy restaurant here, but they'll cook them differently. Like the yeast has gone crazy. It's like really thick, but the ones I grew up with was very like teased out like flat and then just fried in a cast iron pan with whatever the fattiest thing you have around, like fired onto it. And they were fantastic.
Not something I have very often, but I really do enjoy a good Towton.
Yeah, we had a lot of Towtons.
So the next one, cold plate. So this is the cornerstone of many fundraisers, like the women's auxiliary on the get-together at the Lions Club or whatever, and they're going to put together some cold plates.
And they're going to come out later from the back, and you're going to clap for them.
Yeah, that's right.
Like at the wedding.
Yes.
And we couldn't have had this lovely meal this evening, but ladies auxiliary, ladies come out. Clap, clap, clap.
So, yep. Many fundraisers, yeah, selling cold plates for the hockey team or the whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think a lot of times it's food left over from Jig's dinner and they serve it cold the next day, right?
Even when I used to come to town when I was in my 20s, instead of going to McDonald's or anything, I go get a cold plate at Stockwood's, which is this fairly famous convenience store, and sit out in the car and eat a cold plate. And I loved it. I thought I was living it up.
Yeah.
And I was. So can you tell us what was on a cold plate, Barry?
Yeah. What's on a cold plate? Yeah. So basically, it's served cold, hence the name. It consists of meat. Sometimes it's cold cuts. Sometimes it's like actual cooked turkey or ham. You get a piece of lettuce and slice of tomato, right?
Yeah.
Various potato salads. Sometimes the potato salad's yellow from mustard or purple from the juice of the beets. You might get dressing. Dressing's usually made with savory, which is a spice grown here at Mount Sile Farms. Kind of like oregano, I guess.
Savory is its own thing. You can get the spice called savory in grocery stores, you know, anywhere. Like here, you can get it. But just like the turnips taste better when they're grown in Newfoundland, the Mount Sile savory from Newfoundland is far superior.
It's the savory.
Yeah.
Yes.
Every Newfoundland kitchen would have savory in it.
And dressing is stuffing, if people don't know. So, like, we call it dressing here. Coleslaw. A lot of times you get a bit of coleslaw in the old cold plate. Other things like that. Like, so it's usually a bread roll.
There's, like, 30 different things on a cold plate. It's bizarre.
And to Ted's point, cold plate, I'd say it's my favorite Newfoundland meal. I loves a cold plate.
Oh, yeah. It dies for a cold plate. As it
dies
says.
For it.
Barry, you must remember this. Our dad, in addition to loving music, loved a cold plate.
Oh, Dad loved a cold plate.
Loved a cold plate. And one year for Christmas, we gave him a cold plate as his Christmas gift. And we wrapped it up in a Reitman's box.
Yeah, Dad loved a cold plate.
Oh, gosh.
We had to wrap it the day before. I bought it that day or else it was 2 weeks ago and had it underneath the tree. You know, what's that stink?
The dog going mad after it.
Rotten cold plate. So the cold plate, that's a room temperature plate.
Get away from them gifts.
Okay.
What kids we were. All right. So
can I throw out a challenge to both of you? What would you leave off a cold plate? Let's go Chrissy first. Like something to go, get that out of my sight. I don't want to see that on a cold plate. What say you?
Not even a question. It's the purple potato salad.
With beets?
Yeah, the beet one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's mine too. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say one of the two colored potato salads would be the one that I'd have to go.
Mustard salad or whatever it was? Get that out of here. You don't belong here.
Yeah. All right. My next meal is Fraser Farms meatballs and gravy with French fries cooked on snowflake on the stove.
I had to think for a second what that meant.
Oh, yeah.
So in the 80s and 90s, French fries were cooked on the stove at a pot of boiling fat. And this was the cause of many an insurance claim. As you know, people forget but they get the fat on the stove because you know, to burn the house down.
Oh, my God. Like,
I remember going to school on the bus and you'd hear like a report, just the radio on the background. Another house burns down, fat fire, and if it would have been somebody coming home drunk,
yeah,
put on the pot of fat, wait for it to heat up, and then burn the house down because it would explode, because they'd forget about it. That was a regular occurrence. So bad.
Oh, man. Yeah, so anybody who doesn't know, Snowflake is just lard, I guess, or fat. They come in this tub, it'd be like a liter of lard. That was a staple, man. Like French fries with the Snowflake. Fraser fry meatballs and gravy. This green can, meatballs, what I'd say would have to be the lowest grade of meat in the history of meat. I actually thought it was a Newfoundland-only thing, but our good friend Arlo from the Narbos and Brewmans podcast, she actually saw it in Saskatchewan and Texas one time. Is this what you're talking about? So you actually can't get it in other places. But
did she buy it?
Probably not.
She's like a trained chef. So I don't.
Oh, she's a chef? Oh, definitely. Arlo, if you listen to this, I don't know if you do or not, don't buy the meatballs.
Yeah, especially if you got no snowflake on the go. So yeah, because you can't have them proper.
So basically, you cook your fries in your snowflake, and then you just open up a can of this, and you heat it up first, then you just dump it on it, and then that's your meal.
I'm looking at online snowflake shortening. It's available if you want to look it up in 1.13 kilo tub at the Clarenville Co-op.
There you go.
The price is $11.69 for your tub of snowflake.
You can reuse that so often. I mean, that's a year's worth of snowflake. It's the next one. Fried bologna. I mean, bologna is very popular, and Chrissy said, in terms of the screeching. It's certainly not local to Newfoundland. I mean, you can get bologna anywhere, but it's very popular here. It's a breakfast meat, you know, served with beans. You can have it on a sandwich. Very versatile. One thing about bologna is the big stick bologna man is probably the most iconic figure of the Newfoundland Christmas parade.
Which is so bizarre.
100%. Bigger than Santa Claus.
What's your guys' take on bologna? Beans and bologna out in the woods is great, but it's not something I eat very often.
No.
Yeah, it's okay.
That's what I had for main dishes. We'll move on to beverages. So first off, I'm going to talk about some unique beers. Way back in the day, there was a lot of independent breweries here in Newfoundland. I guess when Canada joined Confederation, actually, I believe there was something in the Confederation Act that said the breweries had to stay here, or like the producing plants. I guess they ended up getting bought out by like the big companies and all that. But some of the local brands did survive. Blue Star, Dominion, Black Horse, Jockey Club in India. And I actually drank in India while we're doing this podcast. My plan was to open it and say, here's an India right now. But, you know, that was 2 hours ago when we started. So. And nowadays, now there's like 1,000 craft beers as well. But before the craft beers, there were these brands that you can only get here in Newfoundland. And it was a treat to have when you lived in the mainland. You come back and have one. You know, growing up, Blue Star was certainly the beer of choice for me. I should say growing up, but yeah. When I was 19 and I had my first beer,
yes.
Blue Star was the first one that I liked. So.
I think it was really at your wedding that I got into Blue Star, because you go to the fridge and you'd bring your own beer, but like everybody had Blue Star. So I had a stint of Blue Star at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the beer one. So you go to rum now. There's a couple of rum specific to Newfoundland. So the Screech, which Chrissy's story there. So we went through that one. So that's the alcoholic beverages. So we'll talk more about pop or soda or drink, as we call it here. First thing is, like, Pepsi is way more popular in Newfoundland than Coke, which is unusual. Not many places are like that. And I think it stems here from, I think in the early 90s, Coke shut down the local bottling facility here, the production plant, whereas Pepsi still has a local production facility here. So I think for that reason, people are supporting the home team, which is not really the home team, I guess, but because there's local involvement, I guess, that Pepsi became popular.
You're exactly right. It might have been a little bit earlier than the 1990s. I remember this. You could buy buttons, you know, like the pin buttons with Coke with the Ghostbusters, you know, sign on there. I thought it was popular even before then, though, but maybe...
It might have been, but certainly this was amplified from that for sure.
Right.
In addition to that, there's a couple of flavors of Crush that, for whatever reason, is unique to Newfoundland. I actually saw an article, there were six, and there's one I never even heard of before. But anyway... there's Lime Crush, which you can get in other parts of Canada. I've bought Lime Crush before. Sometimes it'd be in the quote-unquote Newfoundland store, which would basically be all these snack foods that you can only get here. Pineapple Crush is another one. I've actually seen Pineapple Crush in Florida as well. So, I mean, you can get it there from time to time, but certainly it's very popular here. Clear Cream Soda. So instead of the red color cream soda, you get the clear one. Diet Cream Soda, which is actually red instead of clear, but you can only get the diet one here, which is kind of odd. Yeah. Birch Beer. I'm not really sure what birch beer is. Like, beer tastes like beer, and birch is a tree, but the two of them together doesn't taste like what it does.
True.
So woodsy.
And Blue Raspberry, which I don't recall ever seeing before. I think it was one that was made for a very short period of time or something.
Never heard of it, not in Crush flavor.
Maybe that's a bullshit one. I don't know, but anyway.
Maybe that's the one they put in the article to see if you're plagiarizing them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So that's the Crush flavors that are local to here. Next one, Purity Syrup. Purity syrup is this highly concentrated, super sugary drink that for some reason is really popular around Christmas time. Comes in various flavors. The red one is the most popular. I think, is it raspberry or strawberry?
Cherry, I believe.
Cherry, okay. It's a super thick drink that you kind of water down to drink it.
Yeah.
Some people call it clingy. It's okay. I don't mind it. It's not something I drink very often.
I like it. I like the red syrup. I don't like the other ones as much.
I think there was like the Mummers commercial came out at Christmas time and they were drinking purity syrup and that's kind of made it popular for Christmas time.
That sounds right.
So that's the beverage portion. So we'll move on to dessert. The main one would be baked apple pie or jam or something made with baked apples. Baked apple or cloudberry is another term for them. They are these berries that grow in marshy areas around July and August, I would say, Ted.
Yep. I'm a baked apple picker, so I could tell you the almost exact dates. So you're looking at July 25th, definitely no later than August 10th.
Oh, that's very short.
Yes. So very difficult to pick compared to like a blueberry. Baked apples grow on individual plants. And they're not super easy to find, but you have to know where to go. The berries, they start off very hard, and there's just a little window of maybe 2 weeks that they're pickable, because after that, they'll get really soft, and they'll lose kind of their orange color and kind of turn this whitish color. They're hard to pick, and you got to get up, get down, get up, get down, like the whole day.
Gotta say, it doesn't sound like it's worth it.
Or you could just go on the highway and see people at the cars parked there with baked apples and mason jars.
That's the other way.
My mother says I have the berry picking gene. I just like the process of picking them for some reason. I'll listen to a few podcasts. I'm sure I've listened to some weird walking in. I don't think there's many bears on the Avalon, but I have my little bear bell on. So, you know, I don't get eaten.
Really, Ted, stop doing it, yeah. Except for the listen to the podcast part. Everything else sounds terrible.
Yeah, so you go out, you don't get eaten by bears, and you throw your back out going up and down in the marsh. You get drowned in the water.
The fairies take you.
I'm not making a case for going in, but I thoroughly enjoy it.
You're very crunchy granola.
Yeah, kind of. I love it. It's so great. I'm always looking for something new to forage.
Okay. Well, you know what? When the zombie apocalypse is upon us, you'll definitely have more survival skills.
About your baked apple jam and chanterelle mushrooms.
If the apocalypse comes and you all want to come over for stinging nettle pesto, you come on over to my house, okay?
Sounds great.
I'll hook you up. It's good. It's lovely. Yep.
So that's baked apples, like I said, a Newfoundland delicacy. You know, they kind of be going cheesecakes, the jams and stuff like that, pies, all that kind of thing. Mm. Another thing, if you have dessert, you have a cup of Tetley tea with carnation milk.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember, there was a radio contest, and I don't know exactly what it was, but it was like the Tetley tea contest, and they give you all these weird clues, and they had this like weird chime after every clue, and you had to solve the riddle.
Do, 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 do.
Yes, there it is.
Yeah, on the radio. It'd be on AM. Tetley tea mystery, was it?
Yeah, and you had to try and figure out what it was, and I don't know what the prize was. Probably some mug or some
tea?
Shit. Yeah. Lifetime supply, Tetley tea. Yeah. Newfoundland's big on tea drinking, and Tetley seems to be the brand of choice. So, and you got to have a carnation milk. I don't like carnation milk in my hot beverages. I don't know about you guys.
No.
I was just called a granola, and I was going to say, well, I put almond milk in mine.
Do you really?
I do really.
So I'm almost done here. I'm just going to go through a few snack foods here now that are local to Newfoundland. First one, yellow crunchets. Cheetos is a, you know, Chester Cheetah and all that. There's a specific flavor of yellow ones that you can only get here. I guess it's nacho flavored, if I'm not mistaken.
Nacho, yeah.
But my buddy Pete is a big fan of those. When he's home, he always buys, I think last time he bought 13 bags of them or something like that. So. Another flavor of chips that you can only get here is roasted chicken Lay's.
That's good. That's good
yeah,
stuff.
They're pretty good, yeah.
Time right there.
Yep. Going back to purity, we got ones called Jam Jams. Jam Jams are these cookies.
Oh, yeah.
I guess there's like cookie on each end and there's jam in the middle. And when we were kids and we used to always say when someone got the girlfriend, they'd become Jam Jams because they'd be stuck together and you'd never be able to pull them apart. Another purity classic is lemon creams.
Yes.
Chrissy, do you remember lemon creams?
Box of lemon flavored dust crackers.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like lemon in any way, shape, or form. But okay, I do know lemon creams, yeah.
All right. Two other purity products. Number one, ginger snaps, which are like cookies that taste like ginger.
They're okay.
Meh, no.
And peppermint knobs?
Yeah, over my grandmother's peppermint knobs. She'd have them in a little glass jar with a cork top. No, she filled them up perfect.
And they all stick together when you get them.
And just sugar and dye.
And coated also in sugar, right?
Yes.
The next one is not a Newfoundland food per se, but it's very popular here. Vienna sausages.
That's a hard pass.
Yeah, I don't like them either. But Vienna sausages, what it is this little can. There's like six mini sausages in there, and they're packaged in this juice. So you got to open up the can, you drain it out. And then you put the can in your hand and you bang your forearm. And as you do that, the one in the middle pops up.
Look at old James Dean over there.
Yeah.
Cool dude in the lunchroom.
Yeah, you throw in a dart, then have one afterwards. All right. The next one is a toothpick with a piece of cheese, a jerkin, and a cocktail onion.
That's quality.
That's the hors d'oeuvre there for Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, I love the jerkins and the cocktail onions.
Yep.
You can get a postcard downtown that's painted like art. And it's just a toothpick with a Vienna sausage, a pickled onion, and a piece of cheese on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My sister has it framed.
That's high art.
Yes, quite.
And these last couple came from my wife. So number one was slush, which went into beverage. So slush is basically a vodka-based drink, I think. You freeze it, so it's like vodka and orange juice concentrate and a few other things. Put it in your freezer. And Christmas time, you break it out and you mix it with like 7-Up or Pineapple Crush or something like that. And you drink it and you get drunk.
I'm a slush maker now.
So what's the recipe? Because I don't know it off the top of my head.
So the one I make, it's from this book, Rock Recipes. You put in a full ripe pineapple and blend it. And you will put in lime or lemon. I can't remember. You also put in then a full 26-ouncer, 750 milliliters of amber rum. And you put it in a 4-liter bucket. So think about a 4-liter bucket, and almost 1 liter of that is rum. So it's no joke, because it tastes really good. And you kind of can taste it, but it's just so nice.
Here's a good one. Chunks. Do you remember Chunks?
I love Chunks.
I did too.
It costs 25 cents.
25 cents over to Boyd's if you're from Bay Roberts.
Yeah, you go to get a chunk. So basically a chunk is, there's three different kinds of chunks, I think. So what it was like this solid block of chocolate in the shape of a square. So they weren't individually wrapped. So, you know, you can just go up and put your hands in all the chunks and just grab the one you wanted, which is very hygienic.
That's very gross. I never thought about that till right now.
Yeah, so one was a solid chocolate one. One had like nuts in it, I think, and one was a caramel chunk, which was my favorite.
My favorite was the peanut chunk.
Peanut chunk, okay. Ted, what was your favorite chunk?
Caramel, I suspect, is going. Yeah. But I'd say, who was getting the just plain chocolate ones? Oh, I'd say the nuns. The Resonation Sisters. So I'd say they're getting, yeah, just straight up just regular chocolate. Yeah, something just tells me about they want the most boring one. Because we could buy them in our school, buy them in the cafeteria.
I don't know if that was a Newfoundland thing or not, but certainly I've only ever seen them around here. And you can't get them anymore, I think, mainly for hygiene reasons, because you can't.
Nielsen's, were they? Is that the company?
Yep.
Yeah, they have like a fancy N on the top of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the last one is not really a food or anything. It's something that's near and dear to my child. And my wife mentioned, I said, oh, yeah, I got to talk about this. The surprise package. Do you remember the surprise package?
They still make surprise packages.
They still do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that?
It's like a white bag, and it has like a picture of a clown on it.
Oh, a loot bag.
Yeah, it's kind of like a loot bag, I guess, yeah, but yeah. It's called a surprise package. Okay, I think they were like 25 cents, and you open up to be like a lollipop in there, like a really, really shitty toy.
Total junk.
Yeah, a piece of junk and you know, two or three pieces of candy. So you never know what you got.
I didn't know it was called a surprise package. I always thought they were just called loot bags. You get them at the end of a birthday party.
No, you can just go to the store and buy them for like a dollar.
Well, yeah, you could. That's true. That's true.
If you weren't invited to the party. Yeah.
Yeah, you could avoid all that social interaction, go straight to the loot bag.
Oh, yeah.
You can still get surprise packages, Ted?
Oh, yeah. Look in any convenience store, especially around the Bay. Yeah, geez, surprise packages.
What's a surprise package run you now? What do we call them being like less than a dollar?
Well, it might cost you toonie now. I don't know.
Yeah. Next time I'm around, I definitely got to look for a surprise package.
Absolutely. You might get a parachute man. Oh, that'd be good.
And that's my very long-winded discussion about Newfoundland food.
Interesting. Some of the food is really good. I miss a lot of it. Mostly junk food.
Yeah. There you have it. The season 6 finale.
What do you think about all these stories? What food from Newfoundland would you like to try? What food from Newfoundland do you like if you're a Newfoundlander? Maybe you disagree with us. Maybe you agree with us. Either way, you can share your ideas with us at someweirdpodcast@gmail.com.
Or on the X or Instagram machine at Some Weird Pod.
Or at the website someweirdpodcast.com.
And if you haven't done so already, please follow or subscribe wherever you listen so you'll never miss an episode.
And if you've enjoyed this episode and you want to help us out, please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen so others can discover us. And don't be afraid to tell a friend about the Some Weird Podcast.
A 1.13 kilogram tub of snowflake at the Clarenville Co-op is some weird, boy.
Some weird.
'm remember you told a story about a missionary who went to one of these places, and as soon as they left him, they dropped him off in the boat, they shot him and dragged him into the woods.
Yeah, that's the Sentinelese people there in North Sentinel Island. Do you know what this is, Ted?
I watched the documentary recently.
Yeah, they don't fuck around, man.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, you come near them, they'll shoot you down with arrows, and they're protected by the government of India. Like, boys, fuck off. They don't want you around. No one needs your Jesus around here.
It might as well have been called, he fucked around. He found out.
Yeah, exactly.